Okay, we're gonna do a song. It's hot outside, everything messes up. We're gonna do a song about Shiva. Sada Shiva means all the time Shiva. Bhajamana means I have thoughts of devotion for you. Nisadina means day and night. Riddhi Siddhi Dayaka means you give me the things I need in this life. And I have no idea what the rest of it means. Okay. It's a traditional song in India. And you have to sing along. Okay, it's not kirtan, right? It's not call and response. So from the first note, you have to start singing. Okay. There's a trick on this song, okay? It goes, Sata Shiva Bhajamana Nisadina. And then when you get to that end, Mahaka Bhakta Kata Purita Anavarata, and then there's an empty place. And no one's allowed to sing during the empty place, okay? So you'll have to catch it, alright? Okay? Like, if somebody starts singing in the empty place, it's really bad. So when you see everybody up here go, it's like you have to leave it, you have to stop. Just for like one beat, and then you come in again, okay? You'll get used to it. At some point, Kevin and me will do a duet, right? And you don't sing during that duet, okay? This is every song in India has a tat. Tat means raga, right? The feeling. It's the feeling of the key, of the scale. And this is called Yaman Kalyan. The sitar came originally from Persia. And, you know, they invented the different tats. And each one is for a different time of the day. And each one gives a different emotion. So it's meant to give you a certain feeling. So before a class, it's traditional to play some kind of music. And then this tat, Yaman Kalyan. Kalyan Mitra means geshe. Kalyan Mitra is the old word for a spiritual friend, spiritual guide. And this is a tat or a raga, or a feeling of courage. Okay, for a new undertaking, all right? So you're about to become masters of the Yoga Sutra. You're about to undertake a study of a new ideas. And it takes courage, and you have to have courage. So this is a traditional taught or a traditional scale of courage. It's a little bit unusual scale, okay? So here we go. Do it faster, sorry. One, two, three, four. Sada Shiva Bhajamana Nisadina. Sada Shiva Bhajamana Nisadina. Riddhi Siddhi Dayaka Vinatha Sahayaka Naka Bhata Kata Vinatha. So last night, those of you who are new, we're studying the Yoga Sutra. It was written about almost 2,000 years ago by somebody named Patanjali. You have to say Master Patanjali. Okay? Say Master Patanjali. There's a custom in India, you never refer to a teacher as Joe. You say Master Joe. Okay, and if you say Patanjali in the monastery and you don't put master in front of it, you will get a rosary on your head. Okay, then you go home with these dots across your forehead because your teacher whips you with them. You think rosaries are for praying, right? They whip you with the rosary and you get all these designs on your forehead. So we will say Master Patanjali. Okay, and so we're studying a book by Master Patanjali. Last night we didn't quite finish the part we were supposed to finish. We left off one part, which is the part in the Yoga Sutra where he talks about love. By the way, if you're new, this is a tough class. You have to take notes. You will be given a homework afterwards. You have to turn the homework in tomorrow. If you finish the two homeworks from last night, and tonight, by tomorrow, you get a certificate, okay? There's a third homework tomorrow that you're going to take home and do on an honor system. And then tomorrow night, you'll get all the homework masters, which are like 20, 30 pages. Why are we being so nasty and tough with you? We just want you to suffer. No. I get really frustrated. We were talking about the difference between Europe and America as far as learning things. And, you know, it's typical for people to come to a talk like this in America and they just listen for an hour and they go home and they forget everything, you know. Or maybe they're inspired for a day and they forget everything, you know. So I found over many years of teaching that it's better to ask people to do some homework. Okay? So you'll get a homework paper at the end of the class. Please do it tomorrow, okay? And those of you who've turned in homework tonight already, have they turned in? Right? Where's Christine? Where's Christine? Yeah?
Not yet, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So during the break,
we'll ask you to turn in the homework. And I'm going to ask you another thing. If you have a homework in your hands from last night, and you're only missing the last question, I want you to fill it in during the break and hand it in. Because then we can grade your papers by, we can at least grade your first paper by tomorrow. Okay? So, fill in the last question, which I'm about to cover. Okay? So I'm going to cover it right now. And I really want you to turn in your homework. Okay? It's not a dumb thing. It's that we want you to learn how to teach the Yoga Sutra. Okay? The purpose of this class and any class I ever do is to teach you to be a teacher, okay? So I would like to produce in Phoenix, Arizona this week maybe 20 people who can teach the Yoga Sutra on demand, okay? And then if I need someone to teach this Yoga Sutra in Carefree or Eloy or Florence or Gila Bend or any other metropolis, I would call one of you and say, okay, we have a yoga studio and needs Yoga Sutra, okay? That's the idea, right? We want to spread the wisdom of the Yoga Sutra. We don't want to stop it here at the Monte Lucia Resort tonight. After 2,000 years, you know, it's going to stop here. All right? We need the next generation of teachers. So I'm asking you to finish. So finish your last homework question based on the following meditation. So put away all your notes. And we're going to do the meditation from the Yoga Sutra on love, okay? Is there anybody who didn't get a reading for tonight, who does not have a reading for tonight? Do you have more? Any? I'll talk until everyone gets a reading, and then we'll start the closed eye stuff, all right? This is a very, very famous meditation from ancient India, and it's called the Four Infinite Thoughts, okay? The Four Infinite Thoughts. In the Yoga Sutra, it's called Maitri Karuna Mudito Pekshana. Okay, say Maitri. How's it go? Karuna. Mudita. Upeksha. Okay. Say Maitri. Karuna. Mudita. Upeksha. Okay. So Maitri means love. Okay? Maitri means love. Maybe you heard the name of the next Buddha in this world is Maitreya. It means the one who loves people. Okay, so Maitri means love. Karuna means compassion. Karuna means the desire to see people free of pain, have no more pain. Okay? Maitri, Karuna. Then Mudita means joy. Alright? Madana is related, okay? And Mudita means the desire to have ultimate people to have ultimate happiness. So Maitri means love that wants people to be happy. But then the third one, mudita, means not just normal happiness, higher happiness. Okay? So, you know, if you were practicing the first of the four kinds of love, Maitri, maybe you would want to see people get a car. Or you would want to see them do good yoga and be healthy. Or you would want to have them have a nice relationship or something like that. That's Maitri, wishes those good things on other people. Mudita is different, okay? Mudita is higher. Mudita says, I want people to understand how things work. And I don't want them to ever suffer again. Okay? I want people to overcome death itself. Right? The bigger problems of life. Right? The problem of aging. The fact that the body ages and the mind ages. Or the fact that the body dies. Under normal circumstances, the body always gets old and dies. Okay? So mudita, the third of the four thoughts, is I wish people could be free of that pain. Okay? According to the philosophy of the Yoga Sutra, there are worlds, there are planets, which have already overcome this problem. Okay? They don't have a word for death in those worlds, because it doesn't exist there. It's like we don't have a word for, I don't know, we don't have a word for it, okay? Stuff that's not around anymore, you know? Like, I don't know, probably certain horse stuff or things you use to tie up horses. Or things that we don't use anymore because we don't ride horses for transportation anymore. And there are places where people don't die anymore and there's no word for sickness or death. They just don't exist there, okay? So mudita, the third of the thought, four thoughts, is the wish that people could reach that, okay? Because really, it doesn't matter how good your yoga is, it doesn't matter how healthy you are, it doesn't matter how smart you are, it doesn't matter how much money you collect. If you have to get old and die anyway, you know, then what's the point? You see? I mean, you drive around Phoenix, there's so many old people here in Phoenix, right? And you're like, I wish you would go faster, I wish you would put your signal on. And then you have to understand that this person 20 years ago was zooming around in a Camaro and listening to Jimi Hendrix. And they were quite fast and they were also ripping up the streets and stuff. And then aging came. Okay? And 20 years from now you will be like that. Or 30 years from now you will be like that. You know, you will be the same as the people that you're driving behind and upset that they're going so slow. Okay? You will have to be the same. Nor, if you don't understand higher things, if you don't learn higher things, it will come. It comes to everyone. All bright people, all smart people, all talented people, all special people, all powerful people, they get old. And then they get, we call them potato chip bags. You know, what do you do with a potato chip bag? after you eat the potato chips. I mean, you just throw it, you know. And then when these powerful people, intelligent people, talented people, age comes and makes them slow, and they can't remember things, and they're not strong anymore. And this happens, right? That and then death. So mudita, the third meditation, the third part of the meditation is, I wish people didn't have to do that. I wish people could find something beyond that. I wish I could help people overcome that. Okay? So that's mudita. Then upeksha. Upa means over, iksha means to look. The word ogle comes from that. Ocular comes from that. I, augen in German, and I comes from that. Okay? Upeksha, upa, iksha means to overlook something. And it means equanimity. Okay? I wish that my friends didn't have to get old. But I also wish that my enemies didn't have to get old. Okay? So upeksha means that those three beautiful kinds of love, you don't just feel for people you like. I think Jesus said, it's no great achievement to love the people who are nice to you. It's an achievement to love the people who hurt you and who cause you trouble, right? So upeksha is, I wish happiness, and I wish that there was no pain, and I wish that there was something beyond death and aging, for not only my loved ones, but for the people I don't know, and the people I never heard of, and especially the people who bug me. Okay? Like that. That's upeksha. Okay? So these are four very famous meditations that are taught in the Yoga Sutra and many other places in ancient India. Okay? They're called infinite meditations. Okay? They're called infinite meditations. Why? We spoke last night about how karma is of three kinds. Like, what are they? Anything you think, say, or do. Okay? Anything you say or do, or think to say or do, this is karma. How is it recorded in the mind? Just by being there. Okay? You hear yourself think. You hear yourself say what you say. And you watch yourself do what you do. And that's enough to plant it in your mind. That's how karma is recorded. There's nobody needs to be watching you and making a list. Okay? St. Peter, is it St. Peter? takes a break. Okay? Your deeds are recorded by your own mind. As you say anything, as you do anything, as you think anything, your own mind is recording. Those deeds are being planted in your own subconscious by your own mind. Okay? So everything is recorded. Everything you've ever done, everything you've ever said. We did a 3-year silent retreat. Okay? We went out in the desert. We built little huts 21 feet across. And we stayed in them for 3 years. In silence. You know? And we did it from 2000 to 2003. So the first 6 months is very blissful. You know? You're like feeling very, you know, what do you call it? Like a really spiritual person. And, you know, you're sitting there and you're like really toughing it out, and there's rattlesnakes and scorpions, and you're just meditating, you know. And it's very quiet. And then around month number 6, to me, I started to, all the movies I ever saw in my life started to replay in my mind. And all the TV shows started after that. And then after that, all the TV advertisements. So for 1 week, it was, uh-oh, spaghettios, you know, and I said, what is that? You know, and I thought maybe God had come, or, you know, maybe my meditation was getting really good, you know, and somebody was coming. I heard the voice, you know, and then I said, that's a weird thing to say to somebody, uh-oh, spaghettios. And then I realized this is a TV ad that was played on the TV when I was like 6, you know. And I said, I haven't thought of that in all these 40-something years. I haven't thought of that, you know. And now, uh-oh, spaghettios is playing in my mind. So it means everything is recorded. Okay? Every movie you ever see, every conversation you ever have, everything, every thought you have is recorded in the mind. And it's there. And then karma, it comes out, okay? It comes out. We can use karma, what we've been talking about with the Yoga Sutras, we can use karma to design our future, okay? Karma, if you help somebody financially, if you give some money to somebody who needs it, when you let go of the money and hand it into their hand, that plants a karma in your mind, okay? That when you let go of the money, a seed is planted in your mind. And then a week later, 2 weeks later, a year later, depends on how well you understand technique, right? Of karma. There's a karmic technique which we will talk about. You know, depending on how well you understand the process, that will come back to you bigger. 10 times bigger, 20 times bigger. Depends on the technique. Because all seeds grow. The seed for an oak tree is 1 gram. And an oak tree weighs 3 tons. The seed for your body, 70 years of cells reproducing themselves, is one cell from your mother, an egg from your mother, and a cell from your father, a sperm from your father. That's it. It's 2 cells have created a body which lasts for 70 years. So the ratio of seed power to what's produced from the seed is intense. It's incredible, right? So it's the same with karma seeds. If you understand karma and you reach out and give money to someone who needs it, a poor person, that seed is recorded in your mind. Depending on how you take care of that seed, it will grow thousands of times. It can be thousands of times bigger. And last night I told people, my lama sent me to business, you know? We had a huge fight. It went on for a year. He said, you go start a business, you know? And I said, why? I don't want to start a business. I want to be a monk, you know? And he said, first of all, the refugees need money. You know, there were like 200,000 Tibetan refugees at the time, and they were starving. He said, we need to give money to the refugees. So you start a business. Secondly, I want you to see how you can create what you want by using these principles. Got it? He said, I want you to build a laboratory called life. And I want you to see how you can make stuff happen. You can create the future by planting the right seeds in your own mind. He said, I want you to prove it to yourself. And then, you know, 20 years from now, when you're talking to some people in Phoenix, Arizona at the Monte Lucio Hotel, you can tell them, I tried it myself and it works. You know, you're not just getting up and giving some lecture about something you didn't ever do, you know. So he said, you try it yourself, I'll train you how to do it, and you make a successful company, and then you can tell people later it works. And you can speak with, you know, how when someone's speaking from something they really did themselves, how it sounds different to you, you can tell. When you're listening to someone who really did something, then you can tell the difference. Just from the tone of their voice, or I don't know what it is, you have a sense, you can tell the difference. So I did, we started with, I had $7 in my pocket when we started the company. And it was sold last year for a quarter billion dollars, okay? 10,000 employees. How? Understanding how to plant a seed, okay? Understanding the technique of how to start to plant a seed in the mind, okay? From nothing, I'd know nothing about business, I have no interest in business, I don't care about business, I still don't care about business. But just as an experiment, just as a laboratory experiment, we did it. It's the fastest growing company in the history of Manhattan, okay? So it's not an accident, you see? So why am I talking about that when we're on the subject of four kinds of love? And we're just about to start a meditation on four kinds of love. These are called infinite love. This is called infinite love. Suppose you gave money to one poor person, and then you gave money to 10 poor people. Would it be more powerful? Would you plant more seeds? Would you plant more seeds? Yeah. I mean, you would plant 10 times more seeds, right? The idea of this meditation is you are directing that kindness and that love towards every living creature in the universe. Not even just humans, okay? All the animals, all the insects, all the birds, all the single-celled creatures in the ocean, You know, struggling, those little cilia guys, amoebas, you know. And then you're going to, when we do this meditation, you're not going to wish it on your best friend. And you're not going to wish it on all the staff at the Monte Lucia Hotel, or even all the people in Phoenix, okay? You're going to try to imagine that you are sending love to every single living creature in the universe. And don't think this is the only world. In Tibetan, they talk about the frog who lived in the well. Okay? And he was the biggest frog in the well. And he used to brag, you know, I'm the king of the well. I'm the king of this whole well. You know? And then he got very, stuck up. Arrogant, yeah. He's like, I'm the best frog in the whole well, you know. So one day Mr. Crow came and stood on the side of the well. And he listened to Mr. Frog for like an hour, you know. And he said, Mr. Frog, look, the world's a little bigger than your well, you know. And Mr. Frog said, no, this is the whole world. The world I know is the whole world. Phoenix is the city. America's the country. This is the globe. This is the planet. This is where it's happening, you know? He was like us, you know? And then Mr. Crow said, look, Mr. Frog, let me show you. Do you mind if I, like, pick you up and show you something? And Mr. Frog said, well, okay, but don't drop me because I'm king of the well, you know? So Mr. Crow took Mr. Frog and he took him in his, claws, right? Gently. And he flew. And he flew to the side of the ocean, okay? Because Mr. Frog said the well was the largest body of water in the world, okay? So Mr. Crow took Mr. Frog and he took him to the beach on the edge of the Indian Ocean, and he set him on the beach, and he said, open your eyes. And Mr. Frog looked, and he saw the ocean, and his head exploded. Okay? This is a story. What it means is, this is not the only world, okay? Don't be like Mr. Frog in the well, okay? There are other beings that we cannot see. There are lots of worlds that aren't this one. There are many stars, and some of them have people living on worlds around them, okay? So when we do this meditation now, you're going to send these emotions. You're going to think of every living creature on this planet, deep down in the ocean, you know, crawling under the earth, flying through the sky, and then you're going to think of every star there is, and every living thing that might be there, and you're going to send this love to them. And I'll tell you something cool. This is very cool. If you keep this meditation up, and if you do your yoga properly, and you're able to open the heart chakra, okay, through your yoga practice, there will come a day when you see all those beings directly with your eyes closed. Okay? There will come a day. You can do it. The human mind can do it. Okay? You can have a day in your life when you see all those beings that you've been praying for. Okay? So we're going to do it by pretending, right? We're going to do it by pretending. But if you keep up your yoga, if you keep up this meditation, there will come a day in your meditation when you see all of those beings directly at the same time, because your mind has that capacity. Okay? And that's that thing where you hear someone talk about something, right? You can do it. And then what's your life like? You know? Are you worried about the problems in your office after that? You know? Because you see them and you know you will take care of them. You know you will change into a person who can take care of them. So that all happens one day when your chakra is open because of your yoga practice and because of your meditation. So this meditation helps from the inside. Yoga helps from the outside. Together they are unstoppable. You will have an experience of sending love to infinite numbers of living beings. How's that compared to giving money to 10 people? You see? And then you say, well, we're not really doing anything for those people. We said there are three kinds of karma, right? One is just thinking. One is just mental. And that's the most powerful kind. Okay? That's the most powerful kind. To wish something on infinite numbers of living beings is the most powerful thing you can do. Okay? It's like giving money to a billion people at the same time. Okay? So this meditation is called infinite. It's called the four infinite thoughts. And it's Maitreya, Karuna, Mudita, Prakshanam in the Yoga Sutra. Okay? This is taught by Master Patanjali. Okay, so here we go. We'll just practice it once together, okay? The main thing is just try to sit up straight. A chair is fine. Sit up straight. The point of meditation posture is to park your body and get it out of commission. Stop thinking about it. Right? However that works for you, sit in a couch, it doesn't matter. Sit on your kitchen chair, it doesn't matter. Sit in full lotus on a big cushion, that's also okay. It doesn't matter. The point is to get the body out of the picture. So if you take some kind of full lotus and your knees hurt, that's dumb. Because you'll start thinking about your knees. So the idea is, park your body in a way that you don't have to think about it. And then leave the body. Okay? So park your corpse and close your eyes in a way that you don't have to think about it. Okay? Take 10 slow breaths. Out breath is the first half. In breath is the second half. Try to count to 10 out breaths and then in breaths without thinking of anything else. There are four steps to each of the four parts of the meditation. The first meditation is called Maitreya or love. Okay? In your mind, right now, think how beautiful it would be if in the next hour, every person in the world got everything they wished for. Okay? What if everybody's wish in the whole world came true? In the next hour. Think about that. Second step. Decide that it must happen. Pray that it will happen. Third step, decide you will be the person to make it happen. Even if no one helps you, you are going to make it happen. One person is going to figure out how to get everyone in the world everything they ever wished for. I myself am going to try to make it happen in this life. last step. I ask, I call upon the blessings and the help of holy beings and my dear teachers. Holy beings and dear teachers, please give me the strength to do this. Please give me the strength to be able to do this. That's Maitri, that's love. Now we go on to compassion, karuna, the second part of the meditation. Think about how nice it would be if in the next hour, every bad thing happening to every person in this world stopped. How wonderful it would be if every bad thing that was happening to anyone in this world stopped in the next hour. Second step, make a decision that it must happen. Pray that it must happen. Third step, I myself will take personal responsibility in my lifetime to try to make it happen, that everything bad happening to anyone in the whole world stops. I will take responsibility myself. Fourth step, all holy beings, all angels, all teachers in my life, give me the strength to do this. Third part of the meditation, mudita, ultimate love. How wonderful it would be if everyone in this world could go beyond the problems of aging and death itself. What if death itself were stopped in this world? Step two, it must happen. It should happen. Step three, I will make it happen. Even if no one else helps me, even if no one else thinks it's possible, I will spend my life, I will do the best I can do to make it happen. Step four, holy beings, kind teachers in my life, give me the strength, give me your blessings to be able to do this. Step four, how nice it would be if everyone in the world treated everyone like their family. How nice it would be if people didn't make a discrimination between friends and enemies. How nice it would be if everyone felt equally towards everyone around them, and not liking some and disliking others. Step two, this must happen. It should happen. Step three, I personally will try to make it happen in my lifetime. I will devote my life to try to make this happen. Step four, lamas, teachers, holy beings, help me. Give me that strength. Okay, open your eyes, relax. Okay. That's the four infinite thoughts. Okay, that's, you could do that meditation anytime. And that's one of the most important meditations from the Yoga Sutra. Okay? Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, Upeksha. The two, that meditation from the Yoga Sutra. Okay? So you notice there were four steps to each one, right? There was four meditations. May everybody get everything they want. May everybody avoid every problem in their life. May people reach those ultimate goals of stopping death and aging itself. May nobody get wrinkles or lose their hair, okay? Or die, get old. And then the fourth one is, may people learn to treat everyone equally. No friends, no enemies. Everyone a beloved to them. Okay? Everyone beloved to them. And then inside each of the four, we have four steps. This is a Tibetan tradition, okay? Semjen Tamje Dewanan Denpa Gyuchi. Semjen Tamje Dewanan Denpa. Semjen Tamje Dewanan Denachi Marun. Semjen Tamje Dewanan Denpa Gyuchi. Semjen tamje dewadan dambar daki chao. Deta chen nupa lama dan fe chingi lapti su. This is the Tibetan, okay? First one is, how nice it would be. You just try to imagine it. In the case of Maitri, how nice it would be if everyone got everything they wanted in the next hour. You know, like when we walked out of the room, there's like riots in the street and everybody's saying, I can't believe it, a Cadillac showed up on my driveway, you know, and this other person saying, my husband finally said something nice to me, and, you know, like that. So the first one is, oh wow, how nice it would be. Second step is, it's gonna happen. It's gonna happen. Third step, I'll make it happen. Even if no one else thinks it's possible. I mean, a lot of religious stuff, a lot of spiritual stuff is all about doing stuff that no one wants to help you. Everybody else thinks it's dumb. You know, in the end, you're going to have to do everything yourself. It's like running the Monte Lucia Hotel. You know, it's like in the end, it's the buck stops here. You know, everybody can talk, everybody, you can give directions, but in the end, it's your problem. Okay? And you have to take responsibility. So that's step three. I accept the responsibility. And I will do, in my life, I will do what I can to make it happen. Even if everyone thinks I'm crazy, even if I get criticized by everyone, okay, I'm going to do it. Then the fourth step was what? You ask for help. You know, whoever you believe in, I don't care, it doesn't matter. Your heart teacher, God, Jesus, Muhammad, Buddha, it doesn't matter. You ask for whatever divine thing you believe in, say, please help me. I need your help, okay? Because you can't do it on your own. It's not possible. You need help. How are you going to change the world on your own unless you get some really unbelievable assistance here. Okay? And it will come. If you ask, it will come. Okay? Weird stuff happens when you ask. Okay? So that's the beautiful teaching from the Yoga Sutra. Okay, now we'll start the real class. That's from yesterday. Here we go. One of the most famous teachings in the Yoga Sutra is called Ashtanga. Okay? Ashtanga. So, you know, most people have heard Ashtanga. There was a great guru named Sri Prabhupada Joyce who lived in Mysore, and he helped restore yoga to the modern world, and he called his system Ashtanga Yoga. So, you know, most of us now, if you've been to, I started my first 3 or 4 years of yoga was Ashtanga. My teacher called it football yoga, meaning it's the hardest kind of, it's one of the hardest kinds of yoga. So now, when you say Ashtanga, people think, no, I'd rather do Anasara, or Jiva Mukti fits me better, or I kind of like Hatha, or something like that. You know? Ashtanga has come to mean a very tough kind of yoga. But in the old days, Ashtanga meant something else. It meant, say, Ashta,
Ashta,
Anga.
Anga.
Ashta,
Ashta,
Anga.
Anga.
Together makes
Ashtanga.
Ashtanga. So Ashta means 8, the number 8. Anga means a limb, or a branch, or a step to the path of yoga. So Ashta Anga means the 8 steps to the yogic path. Okay, there are Master Patanjali, in the second chapter, he says, okay, if you want to use yoga to achieve the higher goals of life, or even the lower goals of life, like looking good, being successful, having a good partner, use Ashtanga. Go through these 8 steps, you can get what you want. Okay? These are the 8 steps to success in anything. Okay? So Ashtanga is for that. So we'll go through the 8 steps. And I'm going to show you the flow between the 8 steps. This is from the second chapter. The first one is called Yama. Say Yama.
Yama
means self-control. Yama means self-control. Specifically, the ability to stop yourself from hurting other people is called Yama. Yama means to control something. It's a long story. It came from the 2 reins of a horse, because it was an old word for a pair. Okay? And the Y in English changed to G, and the A changed to E, and it became Gemini, the twins. Because it used to mean the reins, the 2 reins. So Yama means control. Okay? Self-control. You can prevent yourself from hurting other people. It's called Yama. So the very first step of the 8 steps of yoga, the first anga of the Ashta Anga, is control yourself, restrain yourself from hurting other people. Okay? That's Yama. Okay. Second step is Niyama. Okay. Say Niyama.
Niyama.
If you think about it, yamas are things you're not supposed to do. Don't kill. Don't steal. Don't commit adultery. Don't lie. Okay? Stuff like that. Those are all negative. See, self-control means don't do this. Niyama means do this. So you can call it commitments or something like that. So the first thing is like self-control, or things you shouldn't do. But then the second step is it's things you should be doing. Okay? Why are those the first 2 steps of yoga? We'll get to that. Okay. Yama ni yama asana. Say asana.
Asana.
Asana. Asana comes from a root as, which means to be. The word is comes from that. The word as comes from that. It means to sit, to be. Asana used to be sitting postures for meditation. Asana meant a sitting posture for meditation. And it was exercises to allow you to be stronger. Increase the strength of your back, your body, that you're strong enough to sit in meditation for 3, 4, 5 hours. Okay? That was the meaning of asana means a seat, right? And then it was developed into yogic postures, yogic poses. The exercises of yoga are called asana. Okay? Yama, first anga. Niyama, second anga. Third anga, asana. Yama, niyama, asana, pranayama. Okay? Pranayama means control of the breath. Okay? Control of the breath. It's really prana, ayama. It's the same yama as in the first one. It means to control. Ayama means to really control. Okay? So prana, ayama, is pranayama. Okay? And it means the control of the breath. Prana means breath. Okay? Prana has two parts. The word has two parts. Pra and un. Okay? Pra and un. Pra means very much. Up front. The word forward, the word proud, the prow of a boat, the word, all of those words come from pra. Pra means up front, number one. Okay? Ana means breath. And it came into English as animus, an animal, and anime, an animation, meaning a living thing, a breathing thing. Okay? So pra-ana, prana, means the vital breath, or the life energy within a being, the inner wind. In Tibetan they call lu, inner wind. In China they call qi. In Japan they call ki. Okay? It's the inner energy, inner power. It's prana, prana. Okay? Prana. So pranayama means to control that power by controlling your breath. Okay? So yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara. Okay? Pratyahara. Pratyahara means withdrawing the senses back into you. It means cut the stimulation. Valeriano showed me a beautiful thing. They're starting in the Empire restaurant. He has worked with his staff. They have just made this beautiful little wooden box and put it on each table in the restaurant. Okay? You know what that's for? They're going to leave it open on the table, and you are requested to take your cell phone out of your pocket, turn it off, put it in the box, and close it. Okay? They figure that so many people will leave it by accident that they will be able to increase the profits of the restaurant. No, just kidding. So that's pratyahara. Okay? That's pratyahara. It's withdrawing the mind from overstimulation. Okay? Cut down on the TV. Cut down on the news. You know? Cut down on all the gab. Cut down on your emails. Cut down on your cell phone. Cut down on all this stuff that fills up your mind. How many pairs of shoes do you have? I have a blue pair of tennis shoes that I wear sometimes. I have a brown pair of Doc Martens that I use most of the time. I have a black pair of loafers. What do you call it? Formal shoes for wearing a suit. I have three. But I can remember them, right? If you ask me how many pairs of shoes do you have, I can draw up a picture of those shoes in my mind. And I know where they are. The blue shoes are in the closet up in my house. The black shoes are in the bag. And the brown shoes are over there. So I know where each pair is, right? That takes space in your mind. That takes space in your mind. Every pair of shoes you add, more space is eaten up in your mind. You see? To remember where they are. What color are they? Where are they when I need them? When did I buy them? Do they need shining or not? You know? You remember those things. Right? Right now you can remember. That much of your mind is taken up. And that blocks your mind from meditating. There's no room. The hard disk gets full when you get older. When you get like 50 or 60, so many dead friends, so many experiences, so many possessions, so many memories of possessions. The hard disk gets up to 90, right? When the hard disk gets up to 90, even on that stupid Windows, the thing turns to red. The, right? You know, the line turns to red. It means don't try to run a computer over 90%, because it starts to act funny. But so does your mind, okay? Try to meditate. It means, pratyahara means, dump the stuff. Dump the stuff. Get as much stuff out. Be ruthless about your house. Okay, go to your house. I have a general rule. Anything you haven't used for 6 months, throw it out. Okay? Anything you haven't used for 6 months, throw it out. If you have shoes in your closet that you haven't used for 6 months, throw them out. Just be ruthless, okay? I did it. I go through my house every once in a while with a garbage bag. And I go to the closet and I say, I'm getting you guys. You know, I throw open the door and I start pulling it, throw them in. I haven't used it for 6 months, but I don't know. These are really nice. You know? And they start to fight back. You know, we don't want to go out to the curb. We want to stay here. And you're like, well, I haven't been here for 6 months, but I might need you next week, you know? Well, who knows, you know? And then they talk to you. They talk you into staying, right? Sometimes I take the whole bag outside and put it in the curb, and I go and I eat breakfast, and then I'm like, ah, maybe I need those shoes. And I go back out to the curb, and I'm looking to the garbage, and I'm like, take the shoes back and put them back in the closet, okay? Be ruthless. No, be tough, okay? Pratyahara. Okay? Pratyahara. Simplify your life. Because the next step is dharma. Okay? The next step, what are we on? Six, I think.
Five?
Yama niyama asana pranayama pratyahara is five. Now we're on six. Dharma. Say dharma. Dharma is the ability to keep the mind on one thing. The ability to keep the mind on one thing, okay? Like Starbucks hot chocolate, okay? No matter where I am, no matter what town, in the afternoon, I go to Starbucks hot chocolate, you know? One thing, okay? And I'm not thinking about truffles on top or risotto cheese or anything. One thing. It's called ekagra in Sanskrit, right? Ekagra means single-pointed mind. Single point means single object. Just think about one thing at a time. In your life, it's a good habit. Now, don't try to do 16 things at once. You know, you can have 16 things running if you're intelligent and you're talented, and you can juggle. In India, they call it shatakarma. A real talented person can juggle 100 projects at once. That's okay, but they do it one at a time. They focus on one project at a time. Even if it's only 20 minutes or 10 minutes, they have the ability to focus. Out of the 100, they're focusing on one. And then they turn their whole focus to number 2. And they have that capacity. They're not really juggling 100, they're doing one at a time. And setting it aside. So dharana means the ability to keep your mind on one thing. Okay? Hopefully it's a virtuous thing. You know? I mean, hot chocolate's not that virtuous. Alright? Hopefully it's like, you know, I would like to get good at my asana so I can open my heart chakra so I can see all living beings and save them. That's like a good thing to do 1.1. Okay? That's dharana. We're up to number 7. Say dhyana.
Dhyana.
Dhyana means the ability, I call it fixation. Fixation. The ability to keep your mind on one thing for a long period of time. Okay? So we're adding what? For a long period of time. You know, we can keep our mind on one thing at a time, but it's only for 15 seconds. Okay? Dhyana means you get the dharma, you can keep your mind on one thing, and then for 3 hours. Classically, they say 3 hours. In a deep state of meditation, you can keep your mind on one thing for 3 hours without thinking of another thing. If you honestly counted your breath at the beginning up to 10 and you tried to keep your mind on your breath for 10 breaths, it's not possible. In my monastery, they say, when you think of something else during the initial 10 breaths in the first stage of a meditation, if you think of something else, you must start the count over again. And if you're honest, you can't get past 4. Because okay? You'll think of something. You'll think there's a noise. Or you'll think about how hot it is, or you'll think about the person next to you, or you'll think about something, right? So, to keep your mind dhyana on your breath for 10 breaths, dhyana is almost impossible. When you get up to 3 hours, you have dhyana. Okay? Not talking 10 breaths, talking 3 hours. Without thinking about breakfast, without thinking about who's giving you a hard time at work, without thinking about the problems in your life, okay? single pointed on a single object for 3 hours. That's jnana. Okay, jnana. Then number 8. By the way, you don't start with 3 hours. You start with 5 minutes. Okay? You start your meditation for 5 minutes, then you work up to 10 minutes. It's not an easy thing. If you can do a good meditation for 10 minutes, you're doing fine. You'll do good. Good. People sit there for an hour and think of 10,000 things and they're just wasting their time. And they're getting into a bad habit. They're actually ruining the mind. You know, people can sit for an hour and they're not moving, but they're thinking of 10,000. My mommy used to call it the international tour. You know? You're sitting there for an hour, but your mind went to China, maybe went to Saudi, you know. But your body is like really good, you know. People say, oh, his meditation is really good. Okay, that's not valid. Okay, what's the last one? Samadhi. Samadhi. Samadhi means perfect meditation. What does perfect meditation mean? You're meditating with focus for an extended period of time on the most important things in the world. Okay? To have single-pointed focus for 2 hours on a hamburger is not samadhi. Okay? There's a content question to samadhi. You are thinking about the high things. Like what? Like love. Like compassion. Like equanimity. Like ultimate reality. What makes the world really work? Okay? By the way, that was the theme yesterday, right? The theme yesterday, to remind you, was that nothing works. Nothing works. Get this. Nothing you ever tried in your life worked. Okay? Every attempt you've made to do anything in your life was mistaken. Okay? Turning the key to get the car to go is wrong. Turning the light switch to make the light go on is wrong. Going to work to make money is wrong. Taking an aspirin to stop a headache is foolish. It's just foolish. Why? Because it doesn't work. But it does work. No, it doesn't work. But it works sometimes. See, I told you it doesn't work. Got it? If it works, it should work all the time. Okay? That's what works means. You see? Does aspirin work? No. I mean, it's simple. You got so used to living in a world where stuff works or doesn't work at random. You fool yourself, you say it works. And then they have the new TV advertisement about the new headache medicine, and what do they say? This one really works. Why do they say really? They do say, right? They say really, right? They really do, right? They say really. Why? Because the others don't. And you got used to it. And you put up with it. Because you go crazy if you don't. You go crazy. If someone comes up to you and says, nothing you ever did worked. If something happened right after you did something, that was an accident. Okay? Every strategy you took in your business, everything you ever did to meet a boy, everything you ever did to get stronger, your yoga, if it worked, it was just dumb luck. Okay? I saw an interview with one of my vice presidents who owned a company with me. It was in Israel. They're from Israel. And they said, Mrs. Azarlan, you know, you've been in business now for 30 years. Your company is now the largest jewelry company in the world. You own jewelry.com. Tell us your secret, you know. What was the big break in your life? What made your company work? She says, you know, after 30 years of being one of the most successful people in the world, I have no idea. It just happens, or it doesn't happen, and it doesn't seem to be any logic to it. Okay? You take an aspirin, sometimes it stops your headache. Sometimes it doesn't stop your headache. You can't predict it. You don't know if it's going to work or not. You take it and you hope, right? You know that. Be honest. You get up in the morning, you put your foot out of bed and you step on the ground because you think maybe something good will happen today. You don't know for sure. You know? Really depressed people, who I think are really intelligent people, they don't get out of bed. They stay in bed all day. And you say, you know, if you get out of bed and they say, what for? You know? And you say, well, don't you want to, you know, meet somebody or accomplish something? And they say, who knows if it will work? And they're the honest people. These are the most honest. Sometimes the depressed people are the most honest people in the world, you know? And you don't know if what you're doing will work, okay? Why am I mentioning this? Because we're talking about Ashtanga. What's that got to do with Ashtanga? Because limb number 8 is samadhi. And samadhi, the ultimate samadhi, is focused on the question, how does stuff work? The ultimate samadhi is focused on the question, how does stuff work? How can I get stuff to happen? What makes stuff happen? Why does aspirin work when it works? Why does an investment in a hotel work sometimes? Why does a stock market investment work sometimes? Why does a strategy to be tough on the employees? Or why does a strategy to be nice to the employees work sometimes? What is it that makes it work? When it works, why does stuff work? That's what samadhi is doing. That's the goal of yoga. That's Ashtanga. The 8th step, the highest step of yoga, is focused on the question, how does stuff work? What causes death itself? Why do people get old? Why does stuff happen in the world? Why do some people succeed when they try the same thing and other people fail when they try the same thing? Why? That's so ultimate samadhi, ultimate meditation, isn't focused on hamburgers or hot cocoa or what you're going to have for lunch. It's focused on the big question. When stuff works, why did it work? And can I make stuff work all the time? And you can. That's why we're here. That's the only reason we're here. Is there a key to make stuff work all the time? And can you find it? Okay? Now, there's a beautiful thing about the Ashtanga, is the flow. The flow of the Ashtanga. Why did he choose those 8? And why did they come one after the other? You know, could I just start with Dharana and then go to Yama and come back to Pratyahara later? You see, why is the Ashtanga in a certain order? Why did the oldest book on yoga teach yoga 8 steps in a certain order? Is there a logic to this? And there is, okay? And there is. What? You start with Yama. You start with not hurting other people. Ahimsa, okay? You start with not hurting other people. Not causing pain to other people. We gotta move the class, so I'm gonna give you the 5 yamas. Okay? There are 5 yamas. The first of the 5 yamas in the Yoga Sutra, and other texts list them differently, okay? The Yoga Sutra is the big mommy text, it's the grandfather text. Okay? Yama, the first yama is respect life. Respect life. Don't kill. Okay? Don't kill. Ahimsa. Don't kill. Respect life. Now, I'm going to give you some of the gray areas, okay? I'm going to give you some of the gray areas. Questions that come up in America in my life for the last 30 years when I taught about ahimsa, okay? So here are the big questions that people ask. Okay? Number 1, is it okay to kill animals? Okay? I understand you shouldn't kill people, but is it okay to hurt animals? Is it okay to kill animals? And I say, why do you ask me that question? They say, and then you get different answers. One is, animals don't feel anything. Then I say, there's a pet store on Shea. What's it called? Pet? Pet what?
Pet
Smart. Pet, I'm sorry. Smart. Pet Smart. Pet Smart. It's a huge store up on Shea. I saw it today. I was like, wow, it looks like Walmart, you know? And it's called PetSmart. People spend $2 billion a year on their pets. Because they can't feel anything? If they can't feel anything, why are you taking care of them? Why are you trying to make them happy if they can't feel anything? It's just ridiculous, you know? I'll tell you a story. I was reading some papers of Washington and Jefferson, right? These are enlightened men. They really are.
They invented the idea that all men are created equal and that you could have a country where everybody has an equal vote. At the time, it was unheard of. People called them insane. You know, they said Washington should be president. A lot of people said that. When he won the revolution, they said, okay, now you're going to be king of America. Sorry, not president. You're going to be king of America. He said, no, no, you don't get it. We're going to let everybody vote. And they said, what? I mean, poor people? Stupid people? People we don't agree with? They all get to vote? And he said, yeah, equal vote. And people said, then later we look back and we say, this man was enlightened. You know, this man was Jefferson, Washington. Read their letters to each other about their slaves. Read their letters to each other about their slaves. How do we get the animals to act right? How do we get the animal slaves, the black people, to pull the cotton properly? How do you train a black person? They're having a serious correspondence on the question of these brute animals called black people. Okay? And then we look back and say, you're insane. You know, that was insane. We have a black president. You know, he's a person. He's a human. He thinks pretty good. You know, he's very inspiring. You know, but in their time, those enlightened men were discussing whether black people were animals or humans. They were having a serious correspondence on whether black people were animals or humans. 100 years from now, people will look back on us and say, they ate animal flesh. They killed living beings to eat when they didn't need to. They caused untold suffering to untold millions of creatures every year when they could have eaten other stuff and been more healthy. You know, and they'll look back at us and say, primitive, barbaric, insane. You know, the way we think about Jefferson and Washington, about black people, you look back at them and you say, these guys are crazy. They were insane. People will look back at us, they'll look up the statistics. They had a PetSmart store chain. They spent $2 billion on pet supplies every year. And then most of them said, animals can't feel anything. You know, they'll say, it's so funny, you know. People say, why do they think that? I don't know. Because they wanted it. The desire overcame the intelligence. They wanted me. They wanted to eat it. You see? They liked the taste. So they fit the morality to fit the taste. You see? They fit their ethics to fit what they wanted. You see? They decided animals didn't have feelings because they wanted to eat them. You see, that's the way it starts. That's the way immorality starts. You want something, then you fit the facts that fit it. You see what I mean? We all do that. We still do that. Okay? So anyway, that's killing. Don't kill anything. Because it hurts. Okay? If you want a better reason, every action you do to another being that hurts them will come back to you 100 times. Okay? Strip the skin off one animal. Your skin will be stripped off 100 times. Okay? If you want a good argument, you know, I'm not going to say it hurts, okay? Forget that it hurts. It hurts you. Okay? Why do people get cancer? You know, why do people get sick? Why do people get in car accidents? Everything has a cost. The more suffering you cause in the world, and by the way, ordering the death of an animal is considered the same as killing the animal yourself, okay? You shouldn't go into a restaurant and there's a cow tied up there and they should give you a knife and say, if you want a steak, you kill it right here, right now. You know? It should be like that. Okay? In fact, karmically, it's considered worse to order the steak. Why? You're requiring someone else to kill it for you. And they collect that karma. They slit the throat for you. So you're paying them to do the karma for you. And there's another rule of karma. If you pay for someone to do something for you, you get the karma, and you also get the karma of causing them to do it. You get double. Okay? People ask me about war. What's the Yoga Sutra's position on war? If you support an effort to shoot other human beings with guns, if you pay a tax that you know is going to shoot another person with his gun, it's the same as if you pulled the trigger. There's no difference. You make the same karma, okay? If you engage another person to do something for you, you make double karma. if you pay a salary, if you willingly pay a tax, which pays a soldier to kill someone else, you collect double. Okay? Alright? I said willingly. Okay? If you object, if you write, just write a letter to your congressman, all the karmas, you're out of it. Okay? You don't have to go, like, stop the guy. I mean, it's helpful. But if you express your dissent, if you just take a few minutes, write a letter to your congressman. I don't know what it's about. I don't know why we're killing people in Afghanistan. I disassociate myself. You know, I refuse. I don't want my money used that way. I stop. You know, I'll pay my tax because otherwise you'll put me in jail. But I refuse to support the effort. I want you to find a peaceful way. If you had spent $60 billion, you could have built a new house for every family in Iraq. And then how would they feel about you? You see, how would their children and their grandchildren feel about America if you had spent the same money to build a house for every single family, which was enough money? You see, it's crazy. So you have to at least write that. Then you're out of the karma. Okay? So that's killing. People ask me about abortion. Okay? In the Yoga Sutra system, in the wisdom tradition of ancient India and Tibet, a fetus is alive at the moment of conception. When the sperm meets the egg, that's a living being. And to terminate it after that is a murder. Okay? I'm not telling you you can't have an abortion. That's not my, I learned not to say that. But that's the position. I can tell you what the position is. The position is that. Okay? What you do with it is your own business. You know, that's your freedom. And that's a good freedom, right? But that's the position of the Yoga Sutra. At conception, it's a living human being. Okay? And to terminate it is murder. My Lama used to say a particularly odious form of murder, because the person can't defend themselves. They can't fight back. The forceps come in and they terminate them, and they can't, you know, fight the guy with the forceps. You know, it's not like trying to kill a big guy. You know? So do with it what you want. I was involved in an abortion when I was a kid, when I was young. And you can stop the karma. If you did it, I often meet people, men and women, who've been involved in an abortion. And they don't feel good about it. I've never met anyone who felt really good about it. Lots of people have done it, but everyone somehow senses that as well. Right? You can wipe out that karma. We're going to get to that tomorrow. Okay? Any karma you've ever done in your life, you can wipe it out. It can be done. You can wipe out a karma, okay? It's possible. And we have to cover that subject or we're all in trouble, right? So that comes tomorrow. So don't worry if you've done even a big mistake you've made in your life. You can wipe out that seed. That seed can be removed from your mind. It's taught in the Yoga Sutra. Tata Pratipaksha Bhavana. Okay? It's in the Yoga Sutra. And we'll talk about it tomorrow. So that's about all the kinds of killing. Stealing, be careful on taxes. When you cheat on taxes, when you steal money out of someone's purse, you're stealing from one person. When you avoid, by the way, legally avoiding a tax is fine. A good businessman should avoid every tax they can, legally, okay, properly, within the law, okay? That's fine. That, I would consider that just good business. Okay? Lying about your taxes. Not paying the tax that you're supposed to pay. Teaching lots of yoga classes and never reporting the income. That's stealing. And it's stealing from the whole public. It's not stealing from one person. You're stealing from the whole public who has to pay the tax to make up the tax that you didn't pay. You get it? So when you avoid a tax, that's proper and legal. You are stealing from everyone else who has to pay taxes. Got it? We just did the infinite kindness, love, compassion, right? That's an infinite stealing. Got it? You're stealing from everybody who pays taxes when you underpay, illegally. Okay, got it? So you have to be really straight on that. Will you be deprived of income? Will you be deprived of income? oh, you'll make more money. More money will come to you. I'll tell you a story. I overpay my taxes every year. Why? They distribute the money to everybody. When you drive a car, you're driving on a road that I overpaid for. I'm getting that karma. I'd love to overpay my taxes because they distribute it to everybody, you see? If I give you $10, that's one thing. If I overpay my tax by $10, I just gave it to everybody in America. It's like really smart, you know? People say you're crazy. People say you're crazy. Okay, I'll tell you a story. I went to a yoga class, Dharma Mitra. I went to Dharma Mitra's yoga class. And Ian and Vanessa, they did a brilliant thing. They got in here, please do it again. He was teaching in this room. He's like the best yoga teacher in the world, maybe. He's the most beautiful yoga teacher in the world, maybe. So anyway, I'm in that class. This guy walks up to me. He says, Geshe Michael, you're a Buddhist monk, right? I said, yeah. He said, I really like what you're doing with the Hindu things. You sing Hindu songs. You support Hindu people. You work with, this is the Hindu text, the Yoga Sutra's Hindu text. You know, you're so, I like what you're doing to be, reach out to other traditions, you know. And I said, thank you, you know. Then I got this email like a week later. He says, it's from this guy. I didn't know his name. And he said, why didn't you thank me? And I said, I wrote him back an email. I said, for what? And he said, you always carry a backpack around, right? I said, it's around here somewhere. I said, yeah, I always carry it. That's my office. You know, I go to Starbucks and I do my work. And then he drink hot chocolate. And then he said, well, check your bag. Look in the back of your bag. So I look in, you know, I'm like, and I find an envelope. It's a $100,000 check. Okay? It was for the water. He heard we needed a water system in our university. And we don't charge tuition. It's a free university. So we don't have any income. And he said, I heard you needed water system for your 3-year retreat, right? So he said, there's $100,000. You know, the first installment is in your bag. You know? And I'm like, wow, you know? Why did that happen? Because I overpaid my tax. That's what I say. Okay, think about it. What I'm trying to say is that keeping your yamas, keeping your ethical code, is not just nice or moral. It's smart. Okay? You make more money. Okay? People will stick money in your backpack. You can't avoid it. You say, no, I'm serious. People are always sticking money in my bag. I go home, there's $3,000 in my bag. Where did this come from? It's just $3,000 in cash. I'm afraid on the airplane they're going to think I'm a drug dealer or something. You know? Because there's always cash in my bag. I'm like, I don't know where it came from. You know? No, I'm saying, being honest with money, not stealing, it's just good business. It's just smart. Okay? If you cheat on your taxes and you cheat on this and you cheat on that, karmically, you just have more trouble making money later. You see? And if you're generous and you follow all the laws and you support everyone and you help everybody, money comes to you, you can't avoid it. Okay? It's dumb to cheat. It's dumb to lie. Okay? It's just, you lose money. Okay? It doesn't work. It's an aspen with nothing in it. Okay? Really? Okay, what's the third one? The third yama is respecting other people's relationships. Okay, respect other people's relationships. So many people come to me, Geshe Lala, tell me the secret to meeting a nice boy. You know, give me the karma to meeting a nice boy. Just tell me the karma for meeting a nice boy. Okay. The main karma is helping lonely people. Okay. The main karma is helping lonely people. To get the boy. You have to help lonely people. That's the main karma. Okay? But to keep the boy is a different thing. That's a different karma. That's a different thing. What's the karma for keeping the boy after you get it by helping lonely people? Respect other people's relationships. Okay? Don't fool around with other people's husbands, wives. It has to be a committed relationship. If they're in a relationship where they both agree that it's okay for the other partner to see other people, that's not a problem. If they had a relationship but now they split up, and they both agree that they're split up, that's not a problem. Okay? Even if they don't have a legal divorce, that's okay. If one person still thinks there's a relationship and the other doesn't, that's a problem. Because that's what adultery means. Okay? So, respect other people's relationships. There's a cute rule in the scriptures. It's the following. Don't do anything with a person's partner that you wouldn't do if the partner was standing there next to them. Okay? Even goo-goo eyes. What's goo-goo eyes? It drives me crazy, right? So people's partners getting goo-goo eyes. So yeah. I'm like, oh, you're married already. You know, stop that. Okay? Right? So that's all. Is it meant to make you suffer? Is it meant to make your life without any spice? You know? No. If you fool around with other people's partners, and then you find the partner of your dream, what will happen? Duh. Okay. They'll fool around with somebody else. It's just karma. It has to happen. It will happen. Where's that karma stay? After you fool around with someone's partner, where does that karma stay until your partner fools around on you? Where does it stay? In your own mind. It stays in your own subconscious. Okay? How is it put there? I watched myself fool around. Uh-oh, SpaghettiOs. Okay? So everything is recorded. And everything goes into that subconscious. You cannot get out of it. It doesn't help to go to an empty room and fool around with somebody. Because the recorder is on. And it's your own mind. You see what I mean? Karma is recorded by your own mind. You can't get out. You can't fake it. Okay? Even thinking about fooling around with someone else's partner is being recorded. And even that has its... Then your partner will think about fooling around. And then you feel it, right? You can be with somebody and they're not fooling around, but you can sense when they're wondering in their mind. And it's very uncomfortable. You almost wish that they'd rather fool around than like be like this all day. Checking their text message, their email. You know, and you know, they're like... Okay? So, it has to be purity in the mind, in the soul, in the heart, right? And it's not to hurt you, it's to make your partnership more cool. Okay? The more loyal you are, the more true you are, the more happiness you'll have in your own partnership. If you respect other people's partnerships, you'll get a perfect partner. That's why so few people in America can find a perfect partner. Because there's this, what do you call it, culture that's, what do you call it? In the movies, it's extolled in the movies, you know. The girl has a bad husband, and then she sees this new guy, and they find true love, and then the movie ends. Right? And then, you know, next year, the guy is playing around with somebody else, but they don't show that part. You see what I mean? We have this culture where it's romantic to fool around on your partner. If you're having a bad partnership and it's not working out, go honestly to the person and say, I think we should separate. You know, just be honest, and if you have to stop it, then stop it. You know, but don't lie and don't cheat like that, okay? Because then the same thing will happen to you, duh. Okay, number four. Tell the truth. Okay? When you talk, tell the truth. Here's the Yoga Sutra's position on telling the truth. When you say something to another person, the impression they get from your words should match what you know to be true. Which is very difficult to do. Okay? It's very difficult to do. Speak in such a way that what you know to be true is communicated to the other person clearly. Okay? It's very difficult. That's truth. Truth, speaking the truth, not lying, means to speak in such a way that the other person's impression is exactly what you have in your own mind about that event or about that person. You know, it's a study in translation. You know, we translate a lot at our university. We have many people working on ancient texts of translation. And the test of truth is that someone who reads your translation should get the same thing in their mind that a person reading the original text would get in their mind. And sometimes that's not a word-for-word translation. It's an impression. You want to communicate an impression. So telling the truth is communicating impression of what you know to be true. And that's truth. Okay? And sometimes that's not the word. That's not the word. Got it? It's tricky. It's tricky. It's hard. It's hard to tell the truth. But anyway, obviously it's good to tell the truth, because if you don't, the more you lie, then your life is weird. Your whole life is weird. Everybody around you is dishonest. Okay? What's this mean? Then you can have refreshments. If you answer this, you can have refreshments. Almost. Ahimsa pratishtaya tatsanidavarajana. What is that? If you avoid harming other people as a way of life, in your life, violence will stop. In your life, in your presence, conflict will stop. What happens if you lie? In your life, in your... I walked into a grocery store with another person. The owner of the store said something to us both. And the other person thought they were lying. And I thought they were telling me the most beautiful true thing. And both of us were right. And that's emptiness. And we'll get into emptiness tomorrow. That's the emptiness of truth. Okay? We walk into a store. The owner of the store says something to me and to a person standing next to me. It's a lie to the person standing next to me, and it's the truth to me, and they're both correct. And that's not a problem. Okay? If you lie as a way of life, you will constantly be lied to. And a person standing next to you who tells the truth will hear true things from the same person. Okay? This is incredible. We are making reality. We are by how we are. Okay? So that's how many?
Four.
Master Patanjali adds a fifth one, which is, you know, simplicity in your life. We already covered it. Okay? Master Patanjali adds a fifth one, which is simplicity in your life. He calls it non-possessiveness. Okay? I want to do one more. In the great traditions of India, in the great traditions of Tibet, another yama is always added. Okay? Another yama is always added. Avoid drugs, avoid alcohol. Okay? Avoid alcohol, avoid drugs. 2,000 years ago, they split it into two. Alcohol produced from natural fruits and grains, and chemicals produced that affect your mind, which means narcotics and drugs. Okay? What's the problem with those things? What's wrong with alcohol? Okay. I'm not talking a glass of wine at dinner, okay? In our tradition, we're not allowed even to do that. That's another thing. I'm not talking a glass of wine at dinner. I'm talking enough wine or enough drugs to lower your good inhibitions. To block your good inhibitions. There are bad inhibitions, right? Like, you feel inhibited to sing the song at the beginning of class. You feel shy. You know, I don't want to say Sadashiva, and I'm afraid when we're supposed to be quiet, I'll be the only person who says something. And you feel inhibited. That's a bad inhibition, okay? But you feel like, I don't want to punch somebody. I feel like punching somebody, but I'm going to stop, because it's wrong. That's a good inhibition. When you take drugs, when you use alcohol, those drop. Those are blocked. Those good inhibitions are blocked. And then you tend to do something you regret later. Okay? That's all. It's not that there's something alcohol is bad or drugs are bad or you're a bad person if you have a glass of wine at dinner. It's not that. It's that when you get to the point where it lowers your awareness, you make mistakes. You run into somebody in a car and you kill them. I have a friend who did that. A baby came out of the other car through the windshield, lying on the hood of their car dead. And they did it because they drank something. Okay? And think how they feel for the rest of their life. He did that when he was in high school. And I've known him for the last 40 years, right? And he has to live with that. He can never forget it. He thinks about it all day, every day. Okay? Why? Because it lowered his inhibitions. You see? It affected his judgment. So that's the thing. They always say, there's a story of a monk. Okay, then I promise to give you a refreshment. A monk, I forget what it was, some lady did it, what was it? I don't know, some lady helped a monk in Tibet, okay? And then he said, I'll do anything to pay you back. She said, I've got you. You know, she says, you gave me your word, you would do anything. And he said, yeah, okay. And she said, well, listen, I'll give you a choice. You can have sex with me, which is breaking the first monk's vow, right? Or you can drink this bottle of wine, which is not also allowed for anybody, okay? Then he had this idea. He was thinking, I don't know, having sex is breaking my first vow. But drinking alcohol, you know, it's like vow number 83 or something. So he said, I'll go for the alcohol. So he drank the bottle of wine, and then he had sex. Okay, so you should have the impression. And I owe you something. I owe you the rest of the flow. Right? We have to discuss what are the 8 steps and why does Yama come first and why does it come in this 9th flow? Okay, by the way, don't feel all uptight, okay? Don't feel like, oh, Geshe-la's up there like Billy Graham. And I saw him pick his nose the other day. You know, or I saw him lie, or I saw him do something, you know? And don't think like that. I'm also struggling, you know? We're all struggling. The point is that all those yamas hurt you, okay? If you steal from people, you lose money. If you cheat on your partner, you have a whole life of cheating partners, you see? It's just meant to protect us from ourselves. It's not meant to, like, cramp your style. Okay, you can have like full style and you can still keep those things and you'll have a fun life, okay? Alright, it's not meant to like put you in a jail and you get wrapped on the roof with a ruler by Catholic nuns at school. It's not like that, okay? Just trying to bring you to a higher level of happiness. Okay? Alright, if you want to come up and say hi or ask a question or something, I'm going to be here, sitting here. And try to make it short so other people can have a chance. And I'd like to ask if you have any questions in general. Let's have some questions after the break, okay? If 2 or 3 things that are in your mind, you can ask them after the break, okay? Did you have a question, something?
I just want to say if anybody still needs reading 2, I have some more.
Okay, so readings are back there. Okay. And we're going to give away some of the books. I thought to give them away, Christine, to the people who did the best 5 homeworks. Okay? So, ideally, if you have a few moments, please finish question 6 on your homework from last night and turn it into Christine, okay? And I'd like to give Christine a hand for all the work she's done. So, have some refreshments and we'll start in about 10 minutes. That I was trained in for many years, 20 years,
And I want to do them here in Phoenix. It's a very beautiful series of teachings on how to meditate and how to go into deeper places. And it was written by my teacher's teacher, who is the Dalai Lama's teacher's teacher. And I want to teach that in Phoenix because I grew up here and it means a lot to me. So that will take 6 or 7 years. We'll probably do it once a month for a weekend, like a heavy-duty weekend. And as I said yesterday, in my tradition, we don't charge for that kind of teaching. So it's just a bit free. And sometimes we'll do a 10-class intensive. It means like a heavy weekend, maybe 4 or 5 classes on one weekend, and then 4 or 5 classes on the next weekend. You know, let's, and then two months later, we go off and meditate on that for like 10 days, intensive, okay? And then you could come, if you can't do 10 days, you can come for 2 days or 3 days, I don't care. And that's also free. You have to pay for the bunk bed or whatever they have, I don't know. We found a church camp, okay? And it's cheap. And you have to hope the person next to you doesn't smoke. But we'll meditate for 10 days on it. So I thought to do that twice a year, 10-day intensive, 10-session intensive teaching over 2 weekends, followed a month or two later by like a 10-day retreat, or you can come for any part you want. And in my lineage, we don't charge for those things because there's no price. You can't. It's priceless, so it's useless to try to charge for it. And I'd like to announce that Monte Lucio Hotel, under the pleasant influence of Ian and Vanessa, and because of the head of the resort, which is Valeriano, they've agreed in November to host the teachings here for free, no charge for their space. That's this poster, okay? And you're welcome to come. And it's a very, very beautiful teaching. And my teacher gave it to me over a 30-year period. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful, exquisite thing that I would like to spend the next part of my life on. I just finished a 12-year cycle with some kids, 130 kids. People ask me if I have children. I say, yeah, I have 130. But we finished, they graduated a couple weeks ago, and I would like to do that for the next couple of years, 6, 7 years. So you're welcome to come to that, okay? And we'll have shorter stuff on some weekends. There's some kind of website. What's the website?
It's on the bottom of the poster.
The website's on the bottom of the poster. ACI?
Yeah,
PHX. ACIPHX. But if you want more information about it, you want to sign up. The part here at the resort we'll probably do in a garden because I was taught a lot of things in a garden, and I like gardens for teaching. But the church camp thing is a little limited. So if you're interested, I would get into it. I would sign up when you can because there's only 100 and something beds there. Something like that. Okay, what time are we at?
9:20.
Oops. Okay, so I'll try to just do like 10 minutes. Let's just do the flow, okay? And I'm sorry. I was going to finish the whole Yoga Sutra in 3 days, but I don't know. Okay. It takes 40 days, okay? Yama. So why did Master Patanjali put this in this book? Yama is about hurting other people. Niyama is stuff you should do, like a daily practice, daily meditation. You should study. You should do your meditation every day. You should do your yoga every day. So number two is really stuff you should be doing every day. Niyama. Number three is asana. Okay? Asana opens up the inner body. Okay, I need a rosary. Anybody got a rosary? I need to, okay, 5-minute intensive on the inner body, okay? Here's why we do asana, and why they are one of the ashtanga. Why are they part of the path of yoga? How do they help you understand things? You have to understand the 3 channels of the body. There are 72,000 channels inside the body which carry prana. They are made of light. If you cut the body open, you won't see them. But they are physical. Okay? The main one starts here, under the skull. Okay? And it's called the Sushumna in Sanskrit, or the main channel, central channel. It starts here. It continues under the skull. It comes down and then follows the backbone, in front of the backbone, and then comes to the tip of your sexual organ, okay? And that's called the main central channel, okay? Sushumna in Sanskrit. This is how they teach it in the monastery. When they teach it in the monastery, they use 2 roses, okay? So you can think of this as like this central channel that goes down your body, okay? Dhruve tadgati jnana in the Yoga Sutra. Say dhruve tadgati jnana. This is the source of this teaching, okay? Then there are 2 channels that come down the side. They start here, on either side, okay? There's one that starts here on the right side and continues, it follows very close to the central channel and it comes down to the same place and part of it's pushed down to your leg, okay? And that, on the right side, it's called Pingala. Say Pingala.
Pingala.
Pingala, the word ping comes from that. It means the red channel. So Pingala, it's a red channel. The central channel has a color like fire, like a candle flame. It's translucent and a golden red, okay? And then over here is Pingala. Pingala is a brick red and a dull red color, okay? And it follows the Sushumna down like that, okay? On the left side is a third channel, because they're kind of like this, okay? 3 channels. On the left side is a channel called Idda. Say Idda. If you want to pronounce it right, you have to turn your tongue back slightly. And that's why Indian people sound like that. Alright? So curve your tongue back and then say Ida. That's exactly correct. Okay. Same with Hatha Yoga. Okay? Say Hatha. Turn your tongue back. Hatha. That's the correct pronunciation. Okay. So the Ida is on the left. It's a creamy white color. And Ida means sheep. Okay? Because it's the white color. Sheeps are normally, except for black sheep like me, they're white color. And that comes down and follows the body. Now the problem is, in prana flows through all 3 channels. Okay? Through all 3 channels flows prana. When prana is flowing in the right-hand channel, you feel angry. You feel upset. You feel off balance, okay? When prana is flowing in the right-hand channel, you get angry or upset, all right? You dislike someone. When you hate somebody, prana is moving in the right-hand channel, okay? I don't know how much to tell you this late at night. I'm trying to keep it to like 5 more minutes. Your thoughts ride on your prana. Your thoughts ride on your prana. If you want to know where the mind meets the body, it's inside the channels where the prana is moving and your thoughts are riding with the prana, okay? It means if you do a yoga pose which blocks the right-hand channel and causes disruptions of the right-hand channel, you will feel uptight, okay? If you do a pose incorrectly and it blocks the right-hand channel, you will feel, after the yoga session, you'll feel nervous or tense or uptight, okay? You'll feel like the teacher's pushing me or something like that, okay? On the left-hand channel, Ida, flows your desire. Wanting things too much, okay? Wanting a hot chocolate is not gonna hurt anybody. You know, wanting to be famous at other people's expense is flowing through this either. Okay?
When you want something bad enough to hurt somebody or ignore the people who you love, right? Then that's running through either. Then the karma is moving through either. Okay? If you cause a disruption of the left hand channel during a yoga class, you will start to feel competitive. You will say, I want to do a headstand better than the other people. You want to do a headstand better. You know? You want other people to fall down, and you want, you stay up longer. You know? And then that means karma flowing in the ether. Okay? In the central channel flows thoughts of wisdom, kindness, compassion, understanding. Okay? When karma flows through the sushumna, you have good thoughts. A well-designed yoga series, a well-executed class in yoga by a teacher, was meant in ancient times to open up the sushumna. And you should come out of the class feeling more compassionate, more wise, more kind, more centered, more peaceful. Okay? Now, there's a problem. Okay? The ida and the pingala cross the sushumna at 5, 6, 7 points in the body. Okay? Like here, for example, the pingala comes across and then goes back to the right side. It crosses over. This is how they taught it to me in the monastery. This was Geshe Thupten Rinchen. He had like 6 rows. He's getting really complicated. He holds them in his teeth and I can't do it, okay? So the pingala crosses over the sushumna at the bruvor madhya, at the between the eyebrows, and then crosses back over, okay? The ida does the same thing and crosses over the sushumna. You have a knot here. It's called a granthi in Sanskrit, okay? It chokes the sushumna. When you choke the sushumna, you can't have a thought of compassion. You can't understand what the teacher is saying. You cannot be kind to other people. You cannot do that meditation on love we started with tonight. When the pingala and the ida are choking this channel, you can't have a good thought. The purpose of yoga is to loosen those side channels. The purpose of every twist you ever did, the purpose of every forward bend, the purpose of every back bend, the purpose of every inversion, is to take pressure off those knots. Okay? That's the purpose of physical yoga. That's the purpose of asana. Okay? It was designed to open up the inner body and allow karma to flow through the channel of kindness. And you should come out of a well-designed asana class feeling happy, light, compassionate. We have some, in our lineage, some beautiful series that are taught to do that, like Nyinguma. Lady Nyinguma is a yogini who lived 1,000 years ago. She has a particularly powerful series to open up the channels and create more kindness, right? It opens the channels. So we were trained in that. That's the kind of yoga that we're training. One more thing. If these channels cross the sushumna, if they choke the middle channel, right? Prana tries to move and it can't move. Then you get pile-ups of prana, traffic jams of prana. And they build up like in a garden hose. So then this expands and then it splits open. The sushumna splits open. And channels go out to the side. Okay? So they start going out this way. Okay, there are 8 channels, for example, at the heart. There are 64 at the navel. There's different things, okay? That choke causes a split, and then prana leaks out in new channels. If you look at it from the top, if you look down the central channel, it looks like the spokes of a wheel. In the trouble spot, in the choke point, the spokes of the wheel have spurted out and created spokes of a wheel. In Sanskrit, that word for wheel is chakra. Okay? And that's what the chakras are. The chakras are where the garden hose split open because there was so much pressure on the middle channel by your wanting to be the best headstand in the class. And you're not liking it when the other guy does a better headstand, which is ida and pingala. Okay? So chakras are nasties. Chakras are bad things. And how to open the chakras? When you open the chakra at the heart, completely, through asana, you can have that experience of seeing all beings in the world. You can have that experience. It lasts about 3 minutes. And you can see the face of every living creature in the world. And you love them. Okay? And that's the purpose of asana. Okay? That's the purpose of asana. Alright? You're loosening so you can think better and you can have more love. Okay? So yama, niyama, asana. Right? If you've been a creep, if you've been hurting people, you know, if you have not followed your yamas, and you do the same yoga poses as somebody else, what will happen? You will hurt your neck. You will hurt your back. You will have a bad experience in the yoga class. The guy next to you, who's been helping people for the last week and serving people, right? They'll do the same asana and they'll have a revelation. Some magical thing will happen. They say, I did this back then and suddenly I saw God. You know? And you're like sitting there and saying, I don't know, I just hurt my neck. So I did the same thing that you did. Right? The asana is driven by the yamas. Got it? The success in the physical yoga is driven by how kind you are to other people. And that's why the yama comes first. And that's why the niyama, the commitments to be kind, that's why they come before asana. So is there a logic to the first three steps of the Ashtanga?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a beautiful logic. Okay? It's a beautiful logic. Okay? I'll do one more. I'll get to number four and we'll stop. Okay? What's number four? Pranayama. The control of the breath. Okay? If your prana is flowing smoothly, because your mind is riding your prana, right? Your thoughts are riding. Say, I'll say a beautiful, beautiful thing. Say, Lung. Sem.
Sem.
Jupa.
Jupa.
Chipa.
Chipa.
Lung Sem.
Lung Sem.
Jupa Chipa.
Jupa.
Lung Sem Jupa.
Lung Sem Jupa.
We have to say it 10 million times in the monastery. Lung Sem.
Lung Sem.
Jupa.
Jupa.
Chipa.
Chipa.
The thoughts ride on the prana. The thoughts ride on the prana. The thoughts ride on the prana. Okay? Your thoughts ride on the prana. If the prana is flowing smoothly, your thoughts are smooth. If the prana is jerky and upset, you feel nervous, agitated, upset. Okay? If the prana is smooth, your thoughts are smooth. You can get at your thoughts using the prana, you can get at your prana using the thoughts. It's really cool. You can get at the prana by using your thoughts, you can get at your thoughts by using the prana, because they are Winsan Yupachipa. They are, what do you call it? They are riding tandem. I like to say in tandem. They are riding in tandem. Okay? If you can do proper yoga poses that cause the prana to flow in a smooth way, your mind should come down and get smooth. Right? If you're having problems getting your prana to move in the poses, work on your mind first, and that will make the prana flow better. You can work either way. Say, what is that? Chinan, Tabla, Sorbet. Chinan, Tabla, Sorbet. You can work from the outside, you can work from the inside. Calm your mind down by moving your body. Or move your body more skillfully by working on your meditation. Got it? You can work either way. Okay? As the prana goes, so goes the breath. The prana is not the breath, okay? Prana is much more subtle than your breath, but they are also connected, okay? If you have trouble slowing down your prana, what can you do? Slow down your breath, got it? If you have trouble slowing the prana, slow the breath, okay? So pranayama comes next, right? Pranayama comes next. If you slow the breath, you can slow the prana. If you slow the prana, you can slow the mind. What are the last three ashtanga? Focus, fixation, meditation. Focus, fixation, meditation. much easier if the prana is slowed down. How do you slow down the prana? Do your pranayamas. How do you do your pranayamas well? Do some good asanas. How do you get the asanas to work on you when they don't work on other people? Be kind to other people with your yamas and niyamas. It's a beautiful system. It's a beautiful system. Make good karma. Be kind to other people. Then go do your yoga. Right? That will slow down your prana in your pranayama. Then your mind will be able to focus. And then you can fix your mind for a long time. And then you can see how stuff really works. And then you can make $250 million in your free time if you feel like it. Or you can find a good partner. Or you can fix cancer in your body. Okay, really. We missed one. We left one out. Pratyahara. Okay? Somewhere between your yoga class and your meditation cushion, try to throw out some of your stuff. Okay? Somewhere between your yoga class and your meditation cushion, try to get rid of it. Try to clear the hard disk a little bit. Got it? So is there a logic to the Ashtanga? It's a beautiful system. It's a really beautiful system. We'll stop there, okay? So you can do as much homework on your homework as you get through the Ashtangas. And then we'll pick up tomorrow. Somehow I'll finish the whole thing tomorrow. There's a custom in Tibet. You leave a little bit left to it. And then there's a reason for us to meet again. Okay. All right, so good night. Thank you for coming.